This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
BBC Sounds, music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, welcome to this Moneybox podcast. Is the law about financial arrangements on divorce working, or does it need to change? And it's hard, of course, for young people to buy their first home, but when they do, how good are they at coping with the financial demands of home ownership? But first, some local councils in England are stepping in to replace the winter fuel payment worth £200 or £300, which this winter the government stopped giving to nearly 10 million pensioners who do not get means-tested benefits. These councils are giving money to pensioners who are still struggling with energy costs, but whose income is just too high to get the means-tested pension credit. The local government association, which represents English councils, has told Moneybox that some are using part of their share of the £500 million household support fund provided by the Treasury. Others are finding the cash from their own resources. Dan Whitworth's been looking into this. Dan, do we know how many councils are doing this?
No, not specifically, Paul. The local government association wasn't able to give us a specific number. So we checked the websites of 50 councils, and around one in five of them are directly offering money to pensioners who have lost the winter fuel payment. Now it's means tested. We should add, too, that many councils already included help with energy bills for those accessing the fund, but they've updated it to cover specifically pensioners who have lost out on the winter fuel payment this year. One of them is North Tyneside Council, and I've been speaking to one of its residents, Rita, a pensioner who lives on her own in a small flat in Whitley Bay. Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing? Nice to meet you.
Oh, God, sorry, after you lead the way.
You do come in. Would you like a coffee?
I'm all right, thank you, Rita. I'm
all right. So, Rita, we're in your lovely home. We've got lots of photos of family up. You've got, is that a gas fire over there?
And
you've got
a radiator. It's there for show only. I don't use it. I have a large radiator there.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice big double radiator. That's hot.
And I also have a very warm kitchen. The bathroom's switched lower, but it is warm. And the bedrooms, I very rarely use heat. And I've just done a load of washing. My energy bills are very, very expensive, actually.
This is a bank statement
yes,
you're going
you
through.
Yes, if you want it.
No, you talk me through it. It's your bank statement.
The gas is an electric, especially. 76.48 gas, and the next 68.65 electricity.
You have a health condition as well, Rita.
Yes, I do. I've had open heart surgery, and my mobility isn't good.
And bearing those two things in mind, just how important is keeping your home warm for you?
Extremely important. I mean, really, I don't think I could survive without it. My mobility isn't good, and the colder I am, the worse it is.
So now I'm just back into your lounge, which again is nice and warm, but it's one of these rooms that needs to be warm for you.
Yes, yes. And I also now wouldn't think of putting the radiators on in either of the bedrooms. For financial reasons, I just wouldn't.
Because it's not a big flat. I mean, it's a lovely home, but you've basically got this lounge, the kitchen and the bathroom that you keep warm.
It isn't a big flat.
How important was the winter fuel payment for you?
It was very important for me, especially in the latter few years. And it made a lot of difference to me.
Was it your heating? Was it your hot water?
It was heating, hot water and electricity. But this year would have been extra specially because everything's gone up in price anyway.
And so bearing all that in mind, how important is this £300 you're getting from the council, from that household support fund?
Very important because I couldn't keep the heating on so long without it.
Even with this money from the council, you're still very much watching your energy use and you're very much...
Yes, I am, because what I would have been left with is not a livable amount of money. if I hadn't got that.
If you hadn't got the £300 from the council to help with your energy bills?
Yes, yes. It's not a livable amount of money.
80-year-old Rita, and she's not been called that before because her 80th birthday is today. Happy birthday, Rita. Dan, how did she qualify for that money?
Well, Rita was referred to the council by Age UK North Tyneside. Now, that council is also writing to thousands of pensioners who get things like housing benefit or council tax support. Karen Clark is the council's cabinet member for health and wellbeing.
When the government in September announced that they were going to extend the household support fund, we then launched a new scheme which was to help pensioners still on low income but not actually eligible for pension credit but were claiming council tax support or housing benefit. And so we are writing to all of those residents. Again, it's over 2,800 residents. And we are offering them some support around the winter fuel, and that will be funded through the Household Support Fund.
And Dan, these councils are in England. What about other parts of the UK?
Well, the share of that £500 million Household Support Fund that proportionally goes to Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, it's about £79 million, actually goes not to the local authorities, but the devolved administrations to use as best they see fit. Now, the Department for Work and Pensions told us over a million pensioners throughout the UK will still receive the winter fuel payment, and that its drive to boost pension credit take-up means 40,000 more pensioners are now getting it.
Thanks, Dan. Well, with me in our London studio is Abby Everett, Head of Client Services at Policy in Practice, a social company that works with councils to help residents get the benefits they're due. Abby Everett, you work with around 60 councils. How many are offering help specifically now to pensioners who've lost the winter fuel payment?
Yeah, absolutely. So we work with a number of local authorities across the UK, and of those, we've found around a third are definitely going to be using their data to identify households who are just missing out on pension credit and therefore the winter fuel payment. A further third are looking also to do this, but are kind of going through the approval processes at the moment.
And you say just missing it. How do they help find the people who are just above the level?
Yeah, so we work with around one in four local authorities across the UK, and we analyse their benefits data, so their benefits administration data for housing benefit and council tax support. And we use that to identify households who are impacted by certain policy changes, just like this one. So we quickly noticed that there was a significant cliff edge that was being created here where households were just over that threshold for eligibility for pension credit. So what local authorities have done has kind of been twofold. They've looked to increase pension credit take up as much as possible. We recently ran a campaign with the Greater London Authority to reach out to over 17,000 households who are eligible and not claiming that support, but also to look at those who are on the lowest incomes and just over that threshold and try to replace that winter fuel payment, like you just heard from the local authority there. And using that data helps them to identify who those households are, and they are the lowest income households.
Yeah, so North Tyneside is writing to pensioners who get housing benefit or council tax reduction, where exactly. The threshold is higher than pension credit, but obviously they're still struggling. And this will come in parallel with other things. They'll try and get them to claim pension credit. They'll try and get them to claim other benefits they're entitled to, presumably.
Exactly.
How many people are likely to benefit from this intervention, do you know?
So what we've found across local authorities that we work with is that they're identifying on average 1,000 households on low incomes who are claiming housing benefit and council tax support, but they're just over that threshold for pension credit. So they're missing out on that winter fuel payment support. It varies significantly local authority to local authority, depending on size. Medway Council, who we work with, have recently identified 1,600 households, and they're proactively targeting a winter fuel payment support to those households. And being able to identify exactly who those households are is key to getting that support to the right households.
And altogether?
In total, we estimated there were around 130,000 households who were missing out by £500 or less per year. They were just over that threshold for pension credit, so they were missing out.
And that's in the authorities you work with. But Age UK says, 2 million pensioners are in poverty, and half of those might be just too much to get pension credit. So it's important work that's being done. Now, a point that's been made, in fact, we had a tweet from Susan about it earlier. We've got this Household Support Fund. It's the same size pot, £500 million, that we've had for some years. If more pensioners get money from it, does that mean younger people who might need help with food and essential items and indeed energy bills, is there less left for them?
what we've seen over the last few years where household support funds been given to local authorities is that the policy and kind of cost of living landscape has been changing significantly. And what data analysis and using this data can do is directly identify who is most impacted by significant changes in policy or significant changes in the cost of living so that support can be targeted to those who are most in need. These are limited discretionary funds. There's only a certain amount that can be allocated. But what was identified early on by us and by local authorities that we work with is that there is this cliff edge where there are loads of pensioners who are going to be impacted by not getting this support, as we heard from Rita earlier. And there is support that is available for younger people across the board from their local authorities who are there to help.
And Abby, finally, pensioners who could get pension credit but don't can still apply and qualify for winter fuel payment, but they've got to get their skates on, haven't they? When do they have to do it by?
Absolutely. So there's a week left until the deadline to claim pension credit and get the winter fuel payment. So claims need to be made by the 21st of December. Local authorities and residents should use benefits calculators to support people to claim, and local authorities are there to support people where needed.
Right, so you can get help and you can also do it online. Search pension credit at gov.uk, or on Monday you can call 0800 99 1234 and ask local charities for help if you need. Thank you very much, Abby, from Policy in Practice. Now, the law relating to how couples split their assets on divorce and provide for each other and any children they have was last changed in England and Wales more than 50 years ago. And the same rules, of course, now also apply to civil partnerships when they end. On Wednesday, the Law Commission, which advises the government on how well they're working, will publish its findings on whether the current rules deliver fair and consistent outcomes. And if it finds problems, it will make suggestions for how they might be solved. Claire divorced her husband in 2019. She told Moneybox's Jo Krasner how she found the process.
What I learned is it's all one massive poker game of holding your cards close to your chest as possible, having as much evidence as you can to fight your cause and why you believe that you should have what you should have in the divorce. Basically staying strong, and you have to be in the right emotional state to enter the process or you're going to get trampled down.
And do you think the law helped you with this? Is it fair?
I think the law in itself, how the law is set out to protect the children in the marriage and to protect the lesser earner, can be, I think it is actually fair. There are obviously loopholes in certain things where if you don't have children and you've entered a marriage, they class you as 50-50 and therefore will split any finances 50-50. And I think in this day and age, we've moved on from when people got married and had very little or had nothing when they first married and their whole wealth was built up during the marriage. People tend to enter a marriage now and they actually have belongings. People are getting married, obviously, later on in life.
Well, with me in the studio in London is Jo Edwards. She's head of family law at Forster's Solicitor and chair of the Family Law Reform Group Resolution. Jo Edwards, is Claire right? Some aspects of this law and the practice since, they really are very out of date.
I think Claire has described very ably there what the position is at the moment. And so in general terms, yes, it could be said the law that we have, the statute we have, is out of date because we've had it for 50 years. Society has moved on. We're very different from where we were. People are marrying ever later. There are second marriages. People are living longer. They're bringing more assets to new marriages. They've got more economic independence. There's also the economic changes we've seen. So in the last 10 years or so, there have been the legal aid cuts, which mean ever more people have to navigate divorces themselves and represent themselves. So it's really important that the law is clear. But what could also be said is that actually our judges have been fantastic, I think, in how they have reflected those changing factors in the cases that we see reported.
Yes, and as Claire said, you know, you have to be emotionally strong and well organised when you're going through a divorce. That's often the last thing you are, isn't it?
I think that's right. And one thing that I would say and that organisations like Resolution would say is that process needs to be thought about very carefully. So we've seen there's been government funding for mediation for the last 4 or 5 years now. We hope that will continue. That's been very effective. There are all sorts of sources of information available to people. But fundamentally, what statistics which came out last year showed was only about 32% of divorcees actually take any legal advice. So, yes, you do have to be resilient.
So two two-thirds really don't take legal advice and have to cope with it by themselves. And it is a complicated area and emotionally fraught, as I said. What were the problems that the Law Commission identified that made it want to have a review as part of its review of the law in England and Wales?
Well, this actually came about because of the no-fault divorce legislation, which was going through Parliament now 3 or 4 years ago. And the government, the then government, made a commitment to look at finances on divorce at that time. Now, it's been said it's a scoping report that's going to be coming out on Wednesday. So it won't result, as I understand it, in a wider consultation or recommendations. But they may make recommendations or may look at different models, which include just keeping the law as it is, but codifying it in some way, to at the other end of the spectrum, having a default set of rules with little room for discretion. That would lead to certainty, but most lawyers would say not to fairness necessarily.
Yes, because your view, as you expressed earlier, was that judges actually do a good job and look at what is a fair outcome, not just saying, oh, 50-50 down the middle, which many people think happens at divorce.
Yes.
And the Ministry of Justice told us the government's committed to improving the justice system and ensuring that separating couples get fair and clear outcomes. And it did say it would give the Law Commission report thorough consideration. So I suppose that's hopeful. But which of the kind of options would you like to see?
I think what I would like to see and what Resolution would like to see is some middle ground whereby some principles and objectives are formulated which guide judges' discretion so that that is clear to everybody, both where lawyers are advising their clients, but also more important, arguably, where people are trying to navigate this process themselves.
Now, I should add at this point that, of course, the law is different in Scotland. We're talking about England and Wales. We
yes.
haven't got time to go into the Scottish law, I'm afraid. But one of the areas we do often talk about is not divorce law at all, but the lack of rights for cohabiting couples. Just briefly, do you expect or hope something will be said about that in the near future?
So Resolution's focus for 2025, and we believe the Labour government's focus is going to be cohabitation reform. So looking at the 3.6 million unmarried couples who presently have no rights on separation or death, it's absolutely pressing that that be revisited as a matter of urgency and some rights and responsibilities brought in.
Yeah, something many cohabiting couples don't know, as we've discussed before. Joe Edwards from Forsters, thank you very much. For many young people, owning their own home seems an impossible dream. The amount they can borrow is often much less than a new home costs, and if they can borrow enough, they still need to save a massive deposit, which is difficult, not least because rent is so high. Latest figures from the property website Zoopla show new rents are now on average £270 a month more than they were in 2021 at the end of the coronavirus pandemic. Some do manage it, though, of course, but people in their 20s and 30s who bought when interest rates were very low are now finding the monthly payments harder to meet, and essential bills like electricity, gas, water, insurance, leasehold service charges, very hard indeed to afford. Ross is 28. He bought a house in 2021. He'd been living with his parents to save up before he and his partner bought their home, as he told Moneybox's Emma Smith.
It was amazing and scary at the same time because it's like, well, this is now obviously the first ever being on a property ladder and obviously sorting everything out on your own, something that usually mum and dad used to do. It's a lot harder. You don't realise like insurances you need. Ours is not a new build. It's like a 60s build house. So obviously there's always going to be something that needs doing. It's some of it is fun, but some of it's like obviously it drains your bank account.
In terms of debt, are you in debt?
Yes. Initially, obviously, by the time we moved in, obviously done the house up and that, we'd run out of money. So obviously at the time I had a credit card. So obviously we needed like a sofa, like fixings, furnishings, like beds, beddings. And by that time, that's like you're already a few grand in debt. And obviously, as well as getting used to paying a mortgage monthly, which obviously was never used to before, and obviously with all the other utility bills and taxes and stuff, it made it very difficult to start paying off the credit card. So each month, you're paying the minimum amount, and obviously you're gaining interest, so you're basically not making any leeway on a credit card. And then you some other stuff in life might throw something at you. So one of our cars went down, so obviously my other half needed a car to get to work.
In terms of the debt, how have you felt about it?
Very overwhelming. It puts pressure on a relationship. I found it harder to even tell my wife, which is sounds really bad. But in the end, obviously, you told her. Obviously, my parents were aware.
Why do you think you found it so difficult to tell your wife?
I don't know. I just didn't want her to be disappointed.
That's very sweet, isn't it? Roz is now in a debt management plan, which was arranged by the debt advice provider Money Wellness. And listening to that in our Salford studio is Sabrina McCulloch, who is their Director of External Affairs. Sabrina McCulloch, You know, I'm sure a lot of older people are listening and shouting at the radio. It's always been hard when you bought your first home. Is there anything new in the idea? Do you have any evidence about what we call sometimes Gen Z, you know, people in their 20s? Are they particularly struggling?
Hi, Paul. Yes, I think it's never been easy to buy a house, but I think if you look at house prices recently, they have significantly increased. So back in 1960, it was about £2,000 to buy a property, which is roughly £65,000 today. So people are facing paying four times that for a property.
Indeed. And what effect does it have? Do they have big debts? I mean, like Ross did?
Absolutely. So the people that we support, we see that one in three people have mortgage arrears and actually also have arrears on things like utilities, council tax, those household bills that Ross was talking about, not perhaps factoring in effectively at the beginning.
Yes. And I mean, he decided, it seems, or he understandably enough, put a lot of this on a credit card. And that's not a good recipe, is it, to put all your continuing expenditure on a credit card when you can't afford it in the first place?
No, we would recommend actually that people use a budget calculator to try to understand what all of those costs are going to be before making a commitment to move either into rented accommodation or to take out a mortgage.
Yes, and there is a budget planner, I know, on your website, moneywellness.com, which people can use for that. Is it just lack of budgeting experience, though, or people not realising, you know, replacing a boiler, burst pipes, as Ross did, you need two cars for both of you to get to work. What is it that causes this?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we're living in a time of a hugely increased cost of living anyway, so things are difficult. I suspect as well that the costs, as Ross mentioned there, of buying a property are not always really understood. So once you've moved in and own your own place, you have to think about solicitor's fees, moving costs, and then you've got insurance. Lots of younger people don't perhaps realise that you have to pay for things like water and council tax. So don't factor those into the budget at the beginning.
Yes. Is this a lack of education? I mean, they should know that. Their parents should tell them that, really, shouldn't they?
Absolutely. There is certainly, I think, less people now talk about money.
Well, like Ross, I mean, he couldn't even talk to his wife at first about it. Is that common?
It is common. So we hear all the time that people take up to a year to reach out for support with debts and they will try to manage that themselves. We would advocate everybody should talk openly about money and people should know that if you are struggling, you're not struggling on your own. Most of the country is struggling at the moment.
Yes. And so where can they get help?
So debt advice is free. There are lots of different providers of debt advice. We have lots of great tools on our website, on the Money Wellness website, and our advisors are available over the phone as well as the online tools as well.
And of course, there's Citizens Advice, which now has a lot of debt advice, doesn't it? The government's given it that responsibility, and also places like yours, Money Wellness. Sabrina McCulloch of Money Wellness, thanks very much. Well, if you're worried about overusing your credit card this Christmas, have you been raising extra cash to cope with the cost? The next Moneybox Live with Felicity Hanna discusses side hustles, what to sell, how to sell it, and whether you need to pay tax. If you subscribe to the Moneybox podcast, you will get Moneybox Live free. Well, it's all free. We love to hear from you with any of your money worries or wishes. Email moneybox@bbc.co.uk or send us a WhatsApp voice note, which we love, on 03306 783 183. That's 03306 783 183. In this podcast, the reporters were Dan Whitworth, Joe Krasner and Emma Smith. Studio manager, Solmaz Aslan. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Paul Lewis, and this was the BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds.
Sean Diddy Combs has occupied a top spot in the music industry for decades. He earned his stripes during the golden age of hip-hop, and he's been called rap royalty. Now, Diddy sat in jail awaiting trial. He denies all the allegations. I'm Anushka Mittanda-Dawati, and from BBC Sounds, this is Diddy on Trial. Every week, I'll be examining the latest allegations, interrogating the rumours, and answering your questions. Listen on BBC Sounds.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Yoga is more than just exercise. It's the spiritual practice that millions swear by. And in 2017, Miranda, a university tutor from London, joins a yoga school that promises profound transformation.
It felt a really safe and welcoming space. After the yoga classes, I felt amazing.
But soon, that calm, welcoming atmosphere leads to something far darker, a journey that leads to allegations of grooming, trafficking and exploitation across international borders.
I don't have my passport, I don't have my phone, I don't have my bank cards, I have nothing.
The passport being taken, the being in a house and not feeling like they can leave.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are unveiled and hidden realities are exposed. In this new series, we're confronting the dark side of the wellness industry, where the hope of a spiritual breakthrough gives way to disturbing accusations.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
And it's like this secret that's there. I wanted to believe that, you know, that whatever they were doing, even if it seemed gross to me, was for some spiritual reason that I couldn't yet understand.
Revealing the hidden secrets of a global yoga network.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this and to put my reputation and everything else on the line. I want truth and justice. And for other people to not be hurt, for things to be different in the future.
To bring it into the light and almost alchemize some of that evil stuff that went on and take back the power.
World of Secrets, Season 6, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.